This week, October 28th, 2014, on The Digital Story. 5 landscape photography tips from the fall workshop. Speed sorting your images. PhotoPlus Expo. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. Thrilled to be here with you today. I'm coming off the fall workshop. We had a great group of photographers, excellent images, fun people. I'm going to record the podcast, and then I'm catching a plane to New York for PhotoPlus Expo. So it's a busy time for photographers, and I think I should get to the weekly update right now. Budget, Miticon 42.5 f1.2 offered by ZY Optics for Micro Four Thirds, Sony E, and Fuji X systems. Now, this optic is priced at $359, and it appears to be aimed initially at Panasonic's Leica 42.5 f1.2 for its Lumix G bodies. Now, of course, that lens is quite expensive, probably about 4 times more than this optic from China. That's where ZY Optics are. They're in China. And it's very interesting. The optic looks a lot like the Lumix optic. Of course, it doesn't have that excellent fit and finish that you see with the Panasonic lens. And it's also manual focus and not an autofocus. But it does have the click stops at the end of the barrel and all that good stuff. And of course, on a Micro Four Thirds body, it's about an 85 millimeter focal length, great for portraits. And you do have the f1.2. So this is something to keep an eye on. I want to see the test reports on it, just in terms of sharpness. Again, it's not going to have the fit and finish of the Panasonic. It doesn't have the autofocus. It doesn't have image stabilization. Of course, if you're using it on an Olympus body, then image stabilization won't be that big a deal because you have it in the body. And initially, they're going to offer it for Micro Four Thirds, and that will be later this month, possibly. Then after that, we'll see it for Sony E and Fuji X systems, too. So I just thought it was an interesting story in the sense that a lot of people were really attracted to the 42.5 f1.2 by Panasonic. Obviously, it's not in very many people's budgets. And if this optic turns out to be sharp, just not as convenient, it could get some traction. Anyway, something to keep your eye on. In other news, PhotoPlus Expo begins this week. It actually begins Thursday. The Expo begins Thursday, and it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at Javits Convention Center in New York City. And as I've talked about on previous shows, I'll be there. Now, I've published my schedule, my speaking schedule, on The Digital Story, and you can go there and see that I'm speaking Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for CT Digital Photography in Rocky Nook, for Lynda.com, and for Panasonic. So I'm hoping that if you're going to the show, you'll come by and see me. If you do and mention The Digital Story or The Nimble Photographer, I'll have a gift for you from the Nimble Photographer store. That's always fun. And I'll have a chance to, you know, hear a little bit about your photography and, you know, what you enjoy about the podcast and maybe any suggestions you have for me too. So it'll be a lot of fun. So my schedule is on the Digital Story. If you're going to the show, take a look at it and make sure you come by and say hi. And then I'll also be publishing tweets on CT Digital Photography, The Digital Story, and posting updates on all those sites, our Digital Story Facebook site, and CT, and probably Rocky Nook too. So, you know, follow it online if you're not at the show. I think there's going to be some interesting stuff announced. And in fact, that leads us into our third segment of the weekly update, which is Canon and Sony have listed two cameras as discontinued. And this is not even, this is just starting to show up in a few spots. But the two cameras are the Canon 6D and the Sony RX1 are being listed as discontinued on certain websites, and I think those dominoes will continue to fall. Now, I think that's interesting right before Photo Plus Expo, because that probably means, that usually means, that we'll see announcements right before the show or right at the show, and possibly those announcements from Canon and Sony would be upgrades to the Canon 6D and the Sony RX1. So I'm feeling like we are, even though this is a Photokina year, and Photokina happened last month, and of course all the stuff that was announced at Photokina, you'll be able to see at Photo Plus, but I think we're going to get some announcements at this show too, and I think this story here about these two cameras being discontinued gives us some idea of what we may see here in the next few days. And that is this week's Weekly Update. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we just finished the Landscape and Safari West Photography Workshop. And I thought I'd share some of the landscape tips that we were talking about in the field and in the classroom during the workshop. It's kind of a way where you can join us without actually standing out there in the vineyards. So I have 5 tips for you, and these are all things that we talked about while we were shooting. And then also when we did the show afterwards, we always do a photographer show where everyone shows 6 to 8 of their images, and we talk about it then. So we talked about these techniques then, and it was interesting that a lot of people hadn't been using some of these. They embraced them during the workshop and got some very positive feedback during the show afterwards. The first one, be daring with the sun. Be daring with the sun. Having it at your back is safe, but often boring. And it's funny, I'm not sure how we ended up having the mantra for a lot of our photography to have the sun at your back. Yes, it's safe. Yes, you do get more even illumination, but I think even illumination a lot of times works against you. And then, of course, if you're shooting people, if the sun's at the photographer's back, that means it's in the person's eyes, and that's not necessarily a good thing. So one of the techniques that we worked on during the workshop while we're out in the field is literally shooting into the sun. We were using grape leaves and trees with color a lot. Having those objects backlit and then building our composition around that. And a lot of times having a foreground subject that was strongly backlit, really bright and colorful. And then you've got a really interesting starting point for your composition. So that is one of the things that I think really will change your photography. Now, it doesn't always have to be directly backlit. I mean, a lot of times you'll notice that you'll get backlighting or rim lighting on leaves and other objects, even if the sun is at a bit of an angle. Let's say, maybe not all the way to your shoulder, but let's say you're looking straight ahead in your shoulder. So there's 90 degrees there. So if you split the difference there, like 45 degrees, have the sun coming at that angle, almost always you'll get some excellent backlighting. So that gives you a pretty wide swath there. You know, basically you have sort of this 90 degree angle here where you can get backlighting and really do something interesting with your compositions. Now, a couple of our workshop participants, 2 of them, in fact, doing the other trick. This is sort of like a bonus tip, where if you're shooting into the sun and you stop down your aperture to f11 or f16, and let's say the sun's kind of peeking behind leaves in a tree, bouncing in and out, you'll get that starburst effect when your aperture's stopped down. And that looks really neat. Now, the other thing that goes with this is that we don't recommend that you look through an optical viewfinder when you're using this technique. Go to live view and compose off the LCD, and that will protect your eyes from any accidental having the sun, let's say the sun pops directly into your lens and you're looking through the optical viewfinder. That is not a good thing. Protect yourself from that. So when you're using this technique, use the LCD for composing. Stop down the aperture. Let the sun bounce behind some leaves or something. Actually, the leaves are bouncing. The sun's being fairly steady there, isn't it? And see if you can get some starburst, see if you can get some rim lighting and some vibrant colors. So just as I'm talking about this, you know, the pieces begin to come together, how if you're just a little bit more daring with the sun and not have it at your back, that the potential for hitting some visual home runs really increases. And of course, the caveat being protect your eyes, don't have any accidental looking into the sun through the viewfinder or directly. Use that LCD. Be safe, but be just a little daring. Okay, number two, fight a lens flare. Now, this comes with being daring with the sun. And a lot of times, even if you're not trying to be daring with the sun, but it just happens to be at an angle where you want to work, lens flare, you know, degrades contrast. It'll flatten out your image. And what that, you know, what causes that is when the light is shining directly on the front piece of glass of your lens. That is what causes lens flare. Now, yes, a lens hood will help you for the sun or a direct light when it's more at an angle. But if you're shooting closer to, not directly into it, but you know, you're more in that direction, you may have to take your hat or your hand and shield the front of your lens, you know, put it between the sun or the light source and the front of your lens. You may have to do that in addition to your lens hood. Now, a lot of times I just use my hat. I think it's easier. A lot of folks were using their hand, and there's such a difference. In fact, I was helping people, and by the way, if you have a photo buddy, this is a great thing for them to help you with, because then you can have both hands on the camera and they can be protecting the front of your lens. But, you know, they'd be looking through and I'd be trying to find, you know, the right spot with my hat. And then when I found it and the front of the lens was shielded, they go, whoa. I mean, the colors suddenly really jump, really pop, because, you know, you've eliminated that flare. And then you go, whoa, that's a nice shot. Hold on, don't move, right? So anyway, just keep that in mind when you're working anywhere where the sun or a bright light source could shine on the front of your lens. Protect it. Don't let it bounce off that front piece of glass or that filter. And by doing so, you'll get great contrast and terrific color. Point number three, find a main subject. Landscapes are great, but you've got to give the viewer a starting point, you know, visually, a visual starting point, and then let them, you know, enjoy the rest of the image. Now, a lot of times a good starting point will be a foreground object that's maybe a bit brighter, a bit more colorful, has an interesting shape, and it's strategically placed so that it fits with the rest of the composition. By doing that, by giving the viewer that starting point, then they can go there, appreciate that object for a moment, and then they can enjoy the rest of your landscape shot. It makes a big difference. Now, if you don't give them a starting point, if you don't give them a bright area or, you know, something that's very colorful or delineated in a way that it attracts the eye, then actually they're kind of searching and they'll be looking at your image and then they'll move on because it's not as satisfying as having, it's like telling a story where you want a beginning and a middle and an end. That is satisfying. You know, readers love that. Well, you're telling a story with your photograph also. So you want to give them a beginning and a middle. And I don't know about the ending. I guess the ending would be, ooh, that's a nice photograph. So that would be a happy ending, I suppose. But you certainly want to give them a beginning and then the rest of the story. So find a main subject, enter that into the composition, you know, have it fit strategically. Then, you know, use that to help you tell the story in an effective way. Tip number 4, look for layers of light and dark. Now, this is a style that I thought, you know, in just in my viewing over the years, my feeling was that Ansel Adams really perfected this. He does it so well as anyone I can ever remember. And you look at one of his landscapes and there'll be, you know, maybe something bright in the foreground and there'll be a dark area behind it, which makes it pop. And then in the middle ground, there'll be something that has some light on it that's kind of interesting, and then dark behind that, and then maybe, you know, some light in the sky or something. Those layers or layering, it gives you depth. It makes the bright areas jump more. It's just visually interesting. And once you become attuned to this, you'll start to see it because it's in nature all the time. Nature will do the layering for us. We don't have to do this in Photoshop or anything. It happens out in the field. We just have to look for it and compose for it. And sometimes afterwards in post-production, crop for it to really drive it home. We may have shot a little too wide in the field, which is okay. We have the essence of the shot there, but then a little cropping really helps us focus that technique. So looking for layers of bright and dark, very effective compositional technique. And I suggest that you look at some of Ansel Adams' work and see how he used this by looking at what other photographers have done. It will help you when you're out in the field to know what to look for. And finally, tip number 5. This is a very important one. Don't forget to reset your settings to default. So using exposure compensation, adjusting your ISO, changing the white balance, going from autofocus to manual focus, all that is great. That's a sign of enthusiast advanced photography. But it can really trip you up if you don't forget to go back to your default settings, let's say auto ISO, auto white balance, even program mode, and autofocus, just to name a few, before you move on to your next shot. That way, if something happens quickly in front of you, then you can just pull out the camera, shoot the shot, and you don't have to worry about shooting a landscape at ISO 3200, because prior to that, you were working in a very dimly lit area and you were trying to capture something. Well, if it's at 3200 and it's a bright day, you're really going to miss out on a lot of the beautiful color and detail that you would have captured at ISO 200, for example. So just make it a habit. Try to remind yourself after you've been fiddling with your controls for a specific shot to zero them back out to default before you move on to the next shot. And those are my 5 landscape tips from our fall photography workshop. Story number 3, speed sorting, how to rate a large batch of photos quickly. There's nothing like coming home from a shoot or a couple days of shooting with 1,500 photos that you're going to load onto your computer and do something with. And it can be daunting. I hear all the time of people who went on a great vacation to Europe or Hawaii or Asia, shot card after card of images, and then I talk to them months later and they still haven't gone through all their photos. They're not sharing them. They've maybe pulled a few out here and there, maybe worked on one or two, but the bulk of the shoot is still languishing on their hard drive. And this can happen even after you have a weekend of shooting. You do maybe a sporting event, and then you go do some landscape shooting or whatever, and before you know it, you've racked up 600 photos. So the key to this is to learn how to sort your images quickly, do it as promptly as you can, and then that way, when it's time to actually do a little image editing, you can work on the good shots, or if you need to share something, you know exactly where to go. And your library stays up to date, which means it's accessible for use. So let's talk a little bit about the technique for that. First of all, if you're looking at your images right after you've uploaded them, if you're looking at them in Lightroom or Aperture or Bridge or iPhoto, if you're looking at those shots, you should be rating those shots. That's the first tip. I don't recommend looking at your images and not doing something. We're excited to see them in the beginning. That's great. Just as you're enjoying them, be applying a star rating to them. Now, the method that I use, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I'm going to reiterate it now, is that the first time through, I just give a yay or a nay to the photo. So as I'm going through the pictures the first time, if it's a solid photograph, if it's in focus, decently composed, usable image, then I give it a yay. Now, the way that I do that is with two stars, but you can do it any way that you want. You can flag it, you can add a color dot, whatever works for you. But the first time through, the very first time you're looking at your shoot, every image should get a yay or a nay. What I don't recommend at this point is giving a final rating to your photograph the first time through. The reason being, you don't have context for it. That may look great. You know, shot number 10 may look great, and you want to give it 4 stars, only to discover 30 frames later, you have something that is much better. Well, then what do you do with it? Do you give it 5 stars? Suddenly, you know, you've inflated your rating system. So you need to see the whole shoot to really have a feel for what is good and what is average. So then you go through a second time. Now, the second time you go through, only look at the yays. Now, I just use the filter in Aperture and Lightroom to do this. So I filter so that it's only showing me my 2-star shots. Now, as I'm going through those 2-star shots, I have a feel for the entire shoot because I've been through it. And then when that image jumps out that really catches my eye, then I can upgrade it to 3 stars. And I go through a second time. Now, obviously, the second time is going to be faster because you have fewer images to go through. You've eliminated a number of them on the first pass. Once you've gone through the second time, those 3-star images, those images that have been upgraded from the initial yay, those should be the only shots you spend much time on. That's where you can crop, where you can do your basic image edits, where you can begin to really try to pull the artistic image out of that photograph. But it should only be on those 3-star shots. I keep all of the 2-star shots. The shots that didn't make the grade, that's personal preference as to whether you delete them or you just, you know, hide them. That's up to you. I keep them because hard disk space is cheap. Other people like to get rid of them, and I think that's fine too. I don't really have an opinion on those images that don't make the grade. But I do keep all the 2 stars handy, and I definitely keep the 3 stars. Now, after I've worked on the 3-star images, a lot of times 3, 4, 5 shots will really rise above the rest of them as the best shots from the shoot. And those are the ones that will get the 4-star ratings. Now, I can do all of this literally in less than an hour, the whole process. And that's for a whole lot of images. For something that's only like a 500-frame shoot, I can whip through that in less than half an hour and be ready to go. I've looked at my images. I've rated my images. I've even done some basic image editing. And so then when I get up to take a break, a half an hour later, I could be done for quite some time until I need to go back and actually perfect a few images for posting online or printing or whatever else I want to do. And if I don't do anything else, and I just let the shoot live there in my library, if I go back weeks later, I can go back to the good shots. I don't have to start all over again, hunting and pecking for images, trying to find the one or two good shots. I've already done that. So the key to speed sorting is do it right away when you're looking at your images. Take two passes. Do it quickly. Just use the keyboard shortcut as you're going through your shots one by one. Yay, nay, yay, nay, yay, 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 nay. That kind of thing. Boom, boom, boom. You go through them quickly. Filter. Just look at the ones that are the yays. Upgrade the best shots in that group. And those should be the only ones you work on. If you do that religiously, you won't have unrated images hanging out on your hard drive. You'll always have your library up to date, and you'll be more efficient in how you spend your time image editing because you're only working on your best stuff. It's a great way to go. This is what we use in the workshop. They only have a few hours of lab time to prepare for their show, so they really have to work efficiently, and this is the technique that we do. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. Our photo assignment for October is water. And you still have a few more days to get your entry in. Please do if you're considering participating in our photo assignment, because remember, one person from that gallery is going to be selected as the Sizzle Picks pick of the month and get a free Sizzle Picks of that entry, of that pick of the month. So that alone is worth doing, not to mention the bragging rights from being a part of this gallery that will be absolutely beautiful. You have to the end of the month, and if you have any questions about how to submit your images, just go to the member info page on the Digital Story, and it'll spell it out for you. But basically, you're attaching an image to an email, and you're titling it the October photo assignment, and that should do it. That should do it. Send it on in. And then here in just a few days, we'll be publishing another gallery, because I try to do that right at the end of the month, beginning of the next month. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And speaking of Sizzle Picks, as I mentioned last week, they've ramped up their capacity. So they should be ready for your order for the holidays. And as a special to our listeners here, they're offering a 20% discount on all Sizzle Picks ordered now through the end of November. For orders placed by October 31st, there still should be time for the free mini samples prior to production. So that means if you get your order in by the end of this month, October, and you put in the comments field, you know, you want the free mini proof, put in the comments field free proof first and your mailing address, they will send you a 5x7 section, 5-inch by 7-inch section of your image so that you can look at it, evaluate it, of course, hang on to it. And if you like what you see, which I suspect you will, then you can go ahead and finalize the order, give them the go-ahead, and then you still receive 20% discount. So how can you miss on that? And by the way, we just had the workshop downstairs. I had the new Sizzle Picks up, and people really enjoyed them. I get comments on them every time. I never have to solicit comments on the Sizzle Picks. People ask me about them, and I answer their questions. And they really enjoyed the Sizzle Picks gallery that I have downstairs here at the studio. SizzlePix.com. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go visit them. Get your free mini picks. Cash in on your discount. And wow your friends and your family. Red River Paper has a new finish out. The 66-pound Palo Duro Satin. It features a subtle surface texture and an elegant warm tone. It contains minimal optical brighteners in the base stock and none in the coating. It's great for portraits, naturescapes, and black and white prints. And black and white on this paper is really cool because it just gets a hint of toning. Just a hint of like a sepia tone. It's absolutely beautiful stock. You can order it by going to Red River Paper. I have a tile on all the pages of Digital Story, and I'll have a link directly to this paper stock in the show notes. And I also suggest that you follow them on Facebook, facebook.com/redriverpaper. And keep an eye out because they give a lot of paper away on their Facebook site. And you can cash in on some free boxes of printing paper. And that's a great thing to have around the house or the studio, because when you get the urge to print, you want to have the paper there. So Red River Paper, a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story, and our longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. All right, well, I think I'm going to finish packing my bags and head out to New York. So wish me luck on my travels. And the next you'll hear from me online will be from the Big Apple, reporting on Photo Plus Expo, doing some street shooting. It's going to be fun, and I look forward to sharing it with you. And then come back next week, because I have some excellent stories I'm working on in the hopper, and I look forward to sharing them with you. Until then, bye-bye now, and have a great week.